Andy Weir, the author of The Martian, has a new book about everyday life in a space colony.
It's not some space opera. You're not in the middle of some galactic war or anything like that. You're, you know, a metal worker, and you live on the moon.
From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Molly Wood. And hey, thank you for listening. We take this work seriously at Marketplace, but we like to have some fun too, making the news relatable and relevant in a way that's easy to understand without talking down to you. And most importantly, it's journalism you know you can trust to be accurate and unbiased. As a nonprofit news organization, we are on a mission that drives what we do every single day, to increase economic intelligence across the country. And now we're counting on your help so we can not only keep doing what we're doing, but do even more of it and get this kind of news and information in front of more people. So for as little as $5 a month, consider signing up as a Marketplace investor. Donate today at marketplace.org. And thanks. We talk a lot about the economics of space on this program, and luckily for us, science fiction writers are already pondering these ideas. Andy Weir is the author of The Martian, that book that was made into a blockbuster movie starring Matt Damon. His new book is about a tourism colony on the moon called Artemis. Its hero, Jaz Bechara, is a 20-something petty criminal whose attempt at a big-time heist goes wrong. The book is also called Artemis, and like The Martian, it's full of major space science. I talked to Andy Weir about his new book, and I asked him if he thought he nailed that science as well as he did in The Martian.
I would say it's even more accurate than The Martian. The actual design of the city itself and the way everything works, from how the power is managed to how heat rejection works to how they built the city, the smelting of aluminum, all that stuff is accurate to modern day science.
Did you crowdsource any of the science?
No, I didn't. In The Martian, the best way to put it is I crowdsourced the fact-checking. I know scientists and researchers and astronauts and NASA personnel and all these really awesome people. And any of them would be happy to, you know, answer my email. And they're all like, you know, subject matter experts. But still, I just used Google because the space world is incredibly well documented. People who work in the space industry are very proud of it. They like to talk about it. They like to post things online about it. They're technically savvy, so they know how to post things online. And the space industry is not, there's very little in the way of industrial or military secrets.
And when you kind of try to bring that world to life or the city to life, is there a part of it that you're the most proud of that you think you really nailed?
Well, I feel like Artemis feels really tangible to me. Of course, I spent the last year immersed in it. So, but yeah, I feel like I didn't make any mistakes. Like there aren't any obvious problems with the design of the city. Like I think that if you built Artemis the way I designed it today, it would function as intended. Mm-hmm. And I'm also, I guess, the thing that's unique, there have been lots and lots of science fiction books, but I did put a lot of work into the economics to make sure that everything makes sense economically. Like, why is there a city? What do they import? How do they make their money? Why would you move there? Stuff like that. Questions that often, in my opinion, aren't answered in science fiction novels. Those things that kind of stick in my craw when I'm reading, I want to make sure to answer them when I'm writing.
Like that sort of, how come everybody seems to be on universal basic income, but no one ever mentions it? That kind of thing.
Or, you know, in Star Wars, the rebels and the Empire are having a war, but they use like human or whatever biological pilots, but they have droids. Why don't they mass produce droids and just have them fly their fighters? And so that, we lost some droids, make more droids.
Yeah, actually. Now I'm kind of mad about that.
Yeah.
Down the rabbit hole. A lot of the technology in this book is sort of, you know, no pun intended, but down to earth. Like it's welding.
Hey-o.
And fiber optic cables. And the hole has, I think, dirt in there, you know.
Yep.
And heat dispersion. And the only sort of, you know, futuristic consumer tech is that everybody has the same smartphone, apparently. I mean, like, is space tech just less sexy than we think it is?
Well, yeah. I just tried to figure, you know, what would life be like? It's not some space opera. You're not in the middle of some galactic war or anything like that. You're, you know, a metal worker and you live on the moon. Well, what's your life like? You know, what do you do? You know, what do you eat?
And then what attracted you to the idea of a colony?
I said, what will mankind or humanity's first non-Earth city look like and be like, and where will it be? And I had stories in mind about the beginnings of Artemis, like about the very first people who go there and build it, the, you know, founding astronauts, so to speak. But I don't know, just those stories weren't as interesting to me as the idea of, okay, well, this is, you know, Artemis has now been around for 20 years and here's some cool stuff going on in it, and it's all very well established. It's the rule of cool, right? You got to go with the thing that's neatest.
And that was welding. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Well, right now, and actually I'd been poking at it for a little while before Artemis's release. I've been working on a sequel to Artemis. Well, not quite a sequel in that Jazz isn't the main character. Jazz is the protagonist of Artemis, but Jazz is not the main character of this next book. But it takes place in Artemis a few years after the events of the first book. I would love to have Artemis be my personal sandbox playground where I get to write lots of stories. I love that as a reader when I'm reading something like that. The best example is Terry Pratchett's Discworld. He wrote a whole bunch of stories, like on the order of 30 books, that all take place in the same world, but it's not a serial. It's like the characters in this book are completely different than the ones in that book, and maybe the main character of this book shows up a little bit in that book, and so on. Mm-hmm. But the whole world, after you're reading those, the world feels so very tangible and real to you, you know, that
right.
It requires zero effort to do suspension of disbelief. And I would love to have my own Discworld. I would love Artemis to be like that. I'd love it to be like, you know, people reading the fifth book in my Artemis saga, and it's like, it, you know, completely new characters, but they're like, oh yeah, no, I know all about Artemis. I know, you know, it's no different to them than if they're reading a book that says, oh, and this takes place in Chicago.
Plus, I'm excited because that means we actually might get the jetpack scene.
Yeah, no, I mean, the jetpack, that's a cool touristy thing.
That was Andy Weir, author of The Martian and now Artemis. Weir also created a whole economic model for his moon colony. Kai Rizdahl and I talked to him about the economics of moon tourism on our podcast, Make Me Smart. I'm Molly Wood, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.